The question was asked, when we read the Midrashim, is there something wrong with taking the Midrashim at face value after what we just learned in the Rambam, that all the Midrashim have depth? So there are 2 points. Shlomo HaMelech told us in Mishlei, Lavin Mashal Umelitzah. Shabbat Shalom, it's great seeing you. Maybe take some Rogalach before you go. Ah, okay. The Pasuk says in Mishlei, Lavin Mashal Umelitzah, that Shlomo HaMelech is going to teach us with Proverbs how to understand the Mashal and the Melitzah. Not only the depths behind the words, but we have to know that when our sages said words that have depth behind them, they gave examples that the examples themselves have meaning, and even if you take it at face value, you should be able to walk away with a positive message. So I think the rule would be, when a person is learning a Midrash, it's definitely legitimate to say, okay, so I got something from the story. I have Chazal tell us a fascinating story that the rabbi said, there are so many demons all around us wherever we go, and God just made us blind so we wouldn't see them. So we don't see them, but if a person would see them, he'd go nuts if he'd realize how many demons are all around them at any given moment. So okay, maybe the message is God gave is kind, maybe the message is there's always potential for harm around us. On the simple level, I hear the message, more or less. I'm sure there's more depth to it. I don't know it. I don't think a person has to learn each Midrash and tell himself, well, the Rambam told me there's more depth, so what is more depth? I don't know more depth. I read it on the surface. Fine, that's what I get.
So if, with the example of the island that started moving, like my first inclination was that's either like Leviathan or whatever's in like Champlain and whatever's in Ireland or whatever, like Loch Ness. Is that the wrong inclination to just always try and look for the logical explanation?
I wouldn't go that route. You see, Chazal told us not to go that route. The problem with going that route, the Rambam's son writes the following. There's a letter from the Rambam's son in which he says people who take Chazal's word of Agada literally sometimes feel very religious fighting for it. And the Rambam says a similar thought in his introduction to the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin, which we learned, which is available online. We have the whole work online. So the problem with that is that a person who takes the words of Chazal literally will fight for it feeling very religious. He'll say, this is what they said, this is the way it is. And at some point, in his mind, part of being religious is, just like they said, this is how we understand the mitzvot, just like they said the straps in my tefillin have to be black, that's their tradition. They also said there's this huge mammal out there somewhere in the ocean which is the size of an island. And in his mind, he equates the two truths. And when someone will take one of these midrashim and prove scientifically to him that it is impossible for that to be scientifically, and when he's faced with that contradiction, what happens, says the Rambam's son, Rabbi Avram, the son of the Rambam, otherwise known as Rabbi Avram HaNagid, he says what happens then is that just like it's being disproven, his simple understanding of the Midrash of Chazal, in his mind he's equated that with everything else Chazal say, so in his mind he leaves everything. He says, well, if that's not true, so everything else they said isn't true. And that's the danger, says the Rambam's son, of taking Chazal's Midrashim literally and feeling very religious, saying, no, this is what they said, this is the way it is, 100%, I'm not willing to budge from that. So that's the danger with going that route. So if a person wants to say, well, I'll get whatever message I can from the literal understanding because I can't get beyond that, fine. But if a person is going to say, I'll take the literal understanding and it must be right, that's a problem. Someone wrote a book recently in which he takes many things in Chazal that seem to contradict nature, and he's a zoologist, and he tries to explain everything they say, how it fits with zoology. With all due respect, it's a book filled with nonsense. You read the book, and if you've ever read Chazal, you look at the guy and you say, I just felt I'm reading idiocy. You could read something, you could say, I disagree. You could read something and say, come on, you're just being dishonest. You're distorting the truth. You're distorting Chazal because everything they said, you want it to fit with what you know in zoology. I read 2 paragraphs, and I just felt repulsed by the intellectual dishonesty. I don't mind if you tell me I don't understand it. I don't know how it could be. Chazal tell us, we learned last night, 2 nights ago, that there was this kind of animal that had a navel that extended to the ground, a wild animal that, I don't know. Never heard of such a thing. It doesn't show up, as far as I know, in any history books. So I have a question, what Chazal meant when they discussed it, because they seem to mean pretty literally that this thing existed. They discuss it halachically. So you can't say this is just a medrash. So on the one hand, it's a real problem. They're talking about something that we don't begin to understand how it ever existed. But they're telling us it existed. So if they told us they had a table that stood without feet, so we'd say, well, I don't understand it, but they're telling me they saw something. So maybe after our research, I'll find out they had this huge magnet on the ceiling, and the table was made of metal, and they had things like that. They had kings that used to want to impress people, want to impress their subjects. They'd hang a magnet over their throne, and then when they'd sit in front of their people, everyone would see how the crown was floating over his head. And the king would be able to impress everyone. He's got magical powers. His crown just floats over his head. Everyone, I mean, how did he do it? He had a magnet, a very powerful magnet, over his throne. Fine.
You could just suspend it and hover, because magnets, if it can hold it that much, then it would go over the ceiling.
Chazal say they had it. So I don't know.
Some clear strings holding it.
Look, I was a magician in my youth. I could tell you many ways of making things float. There's more than one way. Making a person float, making a card float. There are many ways. Fine, it doesn't matter. But I'm just saying, when we read Chazal, so we have to be prepared to say, I don't understand. We don't have to try to fit them into today's science. We don't know.
To think right away that was a whale.
You want to think it? Think it. I think it's being dishonest, because as big as a whale is going to be, it's not an island where they go out and they have a picnic and they make a fire and they don't realize this isn't an island. I know how big whales are. They're not that big. Even though they're long, they're not wide. Not wide enough for you to think you're walking on an island.
Maximum is 13 meters.
Fine, but how wide? How wide?
Not so wide.
That's what I'm saying. So it doesn't really fit. So I'd rather say I don't understand than try to fit Chazal into something that really doesn't make sense, because in the end, I'm just being intellectually dishonest. I'm telling you now, a year ago, a book came out, a year or 2 years ago, a book came out doing exactly this, and it's just a ridiculous book. Ridiculous. And there's a tremendous controversy over the book. I don't think it's worth the controversy. It's just a ridiculous book. It's just intellectually dishonest. I'm not even talking about religious. You just look at what Chazal's saying, and you look at what he's saying, it's just not dishonest. You can't put the two together. So you start saying, oh, they meant this. They didn't mean this animal. They meant this plant that looks like an animal. They didn't say that. Come on. That's ridiculous. Okay, so you want to twist and turn and twist and turn. So just say you don't understand, and that's better.
I'm looking at it through a 10-year-old's eyes. I read a lot of Midrash in
34. Oh, right. That's exactly the point. I didn't want to insult you. But that's one of the things I often say in the beginning of the year. People enter and they think that the Torah is at the same level that they learned it when they were 3 years old or 5 years old or 10 years old. You're not 10 years old anymore. So you have to advance from your 10-year-old understanding of the Torah. A guy walked into yeshiva and he was a multimillionaire, and they were asking him to help fund the yeshiva. So he looks at what one of the guys is learning and he says, oh, he's learning Elul Matzias. I learned that in fifth grade. That's what you're learning here?
He's learning what?
They're learning Elul Matzias. That's the Gemara they're learning. So he says, that's the first Gemara I learned. I learned it in fifth grade. That's what you're learning. You want me to support that? You have adults learning what fifth graders learn. Yeah, he remained on the fifth grade level. In his mind, that's all that exists in Bava Metzia. Fifth grade level, Bava Metzia. He doesn't know. There's more depth. You could learn the Gemara on a deeper level. Learn it in Halacha. We can't remain on that level. We have to move forward. So what we're talking about now is moving forward, right? To my 5-year-old son, when I read this Gemara, I tell him fascinating Midrash. I don't tell him about depths. I tell him, they walked out on an island, and they sat down and they put down some firewood and they took out their pots and their pans. And suddenly they feel a movement. Yeah, him I'm going to tell it as a fascinating story. But you're not my 5-year-old son. So we got to understand more depth.